All right, welcome everyone to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walden with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. It's a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon here in, just outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm joined by one Matt Caraccio from the Saturday to Sunday podcast. He is a graduate of the Scouting Academy, works at Inside the Pylon as well, has done some work for them. He's someone that I've had the pleasure of being on his show with Paul Perdicchese. And it's one of my favorite shows that I get to do every year. And Matt does just such tremendous work. They have, he and Paul do these, do the Saturday to Sunday notebooks, and they do a lot of work with prospects that are, you know, often we talk about in the fantasy community as developmental prospects. And I thought it'd be great to have Matt on the show to share his expertise and to share the things that he's working on. And really, if you need to follow Matt on Twitter is Maddie_S2S. You really need to follow what he does because he's one of those people that is continually learning about the game and does it in a way that I think few people do. He reaches out to so many people from a wide variety of spectrums and is really looking into things that I just think are maybe our cutting edge, but also just things that make a lot of sense to look at. So that long wind up, Matt, welcome to the show.
Well, listen, honestly, Matt, I mean, the pleasure is entirely mine because to be very frank with you, I don't think I'm sitting here if it wasn't for somebody like yourself and a lot of people that I followed very early on just for inspiring me to kind of just look at performance and look at athletes in very unique ways. I mean, your RSP is nothing but legendary in our world, just for the way in which it really approaches evaluation and really the pleasure and is really entirely mine. So thank you so much for having me. I mean, to pivot off some of the things that you said, honestly, as we kind of look at the different things that we do at SaturdaySundayFootball.com, one of the biggest things that we put out, as you alluded to, was the premium notebooks. And the premium notebooks actually just kind of finished wrapping up their kind of 2019 iteration. And the scouting notebooks are really, I think at the time, you know, it's funny how the industry is kind of changing all the time. But at the time when we had started it kind of last year, the idea was to be exactly what it is, a notebook. You know, I mean, you know, Paul and I and Dave Nakano are really just, you know, three people kind of keeping it all together. And the three of us really wanted to do just what we were doing on our show, which is provide the notes that we use for our film analysis. And, you know, what you get in those four notebooks, and I think they are very much, they have some very much evergreen material to it. There are things to it that I think you can always come back to. The 2019 scouting notebook is really where we had almost 100 player kind of notes or profiles that we kind of assembled through our own film analysis. We're very big on authenticity. We really want to give our authentic takes. So you get over 100 player profiles where we look at quarterbacks, tight ends, wide receivers, and running backs. And, you know, we really try to organize it so it's really quick and easy to read, so you can really access the thoughts and interesting points that you want. We do things like scheme fit, things that we really think that we want to know when we're kind of drafting our own teams. So that's one of the notebooks. The other notebook is our rankings notebook, where you can find literally our rankings throughout the year, from our tiers and a definition of our tiers to essentially our, you know, film evaluation rankings, where we kind of try to play GM for a moment and ask ourselves, you know, how would we rate these guys and what would we look at them for? So you get an array of rankings, including Devi rankings, where we look at some of the underclassmen and begin to kind of stack the deck for the future. So that way people that are in those types of leagues with taxi squads, or as you said, developmental kind of Devi leagues or developmental prospects, if you're thinking about, you know, what the, you know, value of your current draft pick in your rookie league is, you know, you can begin to assess that by looking at the upcoming classes and say to yourself, you know, hey, the crop of running backs next year are really appealing. So, you know what? I have an eighth round pick, or I have an eighth pick overall in the first round. You know what? I think for my rookie pick this year, since there's so much indecisiveness and uncertainty about what these guys are going to do, I think I'm going to trade that for, you know, a first round pick next year. I'm going to kind of roll the dice and push it forward down the line. So I think that's where that information is really useful and kind of affords you those opportunities to make those kind of shark level deals in the future. And then in addition to that, you also get a freshman notebook, which is something that I just finished recently. Usually it's out earlier. It came out a little later this year, but it is what it sounds like. It's the top 40 freshmen. I watched probably over 100 players and kind of put together a watch list and a top 40 list with evaluations and overall understanding of the player's strengths and weaknesses, and tried to give people an understanding of where these players are, who they are, what types of players they're going to become or may become. So that way you can, again, use that information to your advantage. And last but not least is probably the biggest labor of love, and that's by Paul Perticchese. You can follow Paul, you know, at Paulie23NY, and he does a really outstanding job really working on the draft. I know he was able to sit with you guys, Matt, on the football.
Oh, yeah, he did a great work.
Yeah, I mean, he is the absolute, not only does he know football, but what Paul does really well is he really does digest the broader landscape of material that's out there. He really does have a good working knowledge of depth charts. He does really have a nice working knowledge of coaching changes, and he really does a great job of kind of assimilating that into rankings. And he really does a nice job doing that because his passion is the draft. And he puts together our draft projections notebook, which is essentially the best way to describe it is a companion guide for the draft. And it really is. It's really everything at your fingertips, combine, combine notes, player kind of notes, little snippets, though. It's like, you know, athletic, mobile player belongs in a 4-3 defense. You know, little quick little notes to kind of give you a picture of who these players are. And he really does a nice job of calling all the experts throughout the industry and kind of coming up where he feels the round and ranks these guys will go in. You know, he makes no secret of it. He's putting information together so that everybody has access and can enjoy the draft differently. It's really a different type of notebook that we put out. And that's kind of the gist of our premium notebooks. And, you know, honestly, for it's a two-man operation, and every time we kind of get done with it, we're always like, wow. It just blows my mind, Matt, when I think about the RSP, because you're a one-man operation. I can only begin to think about that, you know, when you start putting it all together.
Well, so. I mean, to be transparent, you know, there are 7 to 8 men and women who are helping me out on the editing range at the end of this. So if it weren't for them, you know, I don't think I'd sell anything because I'd be a blithering idiot. but you, again, you guys, I mean, listen, you know, what you just described is a comprehensive look at, you know, at the rookie class, at it, now, is it incoming freshmen or is it the freshmen from this year, the incoming freshmen?
Yeah, it's the incoming freshmen. So you're going to get looks at players that you should probably have on your radar this upcoming season and players you should probably begin to maybe stockpile away if you have a Devy draft where you're kind of getting involved with future picks. These are guys that you could definitely want to get your hands on early. And it also, I think, really empowers you to kind of just enjoy the games on Saturdays a little bit more because you kind of have a feel for what you might be seeing.
Awesome. So, and you can get this directly at SaturdayToSunday.com, correct?
Yes, you can go to our website, SaturdayToSundayFootball.com or S2SFootball.com, and you can follow the appropriate links and you can purchase it. It's only $9.99. You get all four notebooks, and it really is, I think, it's a way just really to help support the podcast, and it's something that we wanted to be able to give people that did that for us. So excellent. It really is a labor of love.
Excellent. Well, let's get into some players. And, you know, One of the things that right away, I mean, it's kind of funny. I've had a couple of dynasty drafts with some Devy picks to make in them, and I have, you know, I generally wait until they're draft eligible to really start looking at them. So, you know, I've gotten to watch a couple of guys that came to mind. I've watched some receivers and, you know, guys like Justin Ross and that kid from Purdue, the freshman from Purdue, Moore, is it his last? Rondale Moore.
Yeah.
I'm curious about either them or anyone that you've looked at that just like really stands out that are some of your favorites and why.
Well, I mean, you know, to be very honest with you, I'm going to start at the quarterback position. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, Trevor Lawrence was a guy that, for the most part, it's silly to say now. I mean, it sounds like almost revisionist history, like he's our favorite player because he won the national championship. But he really was. Coming out of high school, he was a player at the quarterback position that really excelled in a lot of ways. You know, Matt, we've talked many times about how, you know, I'm trying to kind of reevaluate how I kind of frame players and look at players to kind of maybe give a little bit more of a comprehensive look at the player. You know, traits are great, but I'm also in that world of trying to understand players through functionality and whether or not they're functional on the field, given the tasks that they're kind of presented with. And when you look at a guy like, you know, Trevor Lawrence at a very young age, he showed functionality in a variety of circumstances, which is really what I think really kind of underlines his skill at the position. And at the very early age, we were seeing things like, you know, in high school, it wasn't just that he was able to throw a deep ball, but it was able to throw it in stride, which means that his wide receiver was able to catch it and still gain yards after the catch. That shows an incredible level of sensitivity to the information that's available to him on the field of play during an actual exchange. It just shows a higher level of skill than many quarterbacks maybe have at that age. He's got to adjust for the route and velocity of his wide receiver. He's got to adjust for the coverage. He's got to be able to coordinate his body, his throw, everything to connecting with the receiver in stride to create those yards after catch. It's not just a trait that's devout of circumstance. It's, in fact, the actual idea that he can play within those circumstances and still accomplish the task at a high level, which makes him such a skilled athlete. And he was showing, you know, the ability to do that at the high school level. And he was able to do it at all levels of the field. He was able to do it under varying pocket constraints, whether it be under pressure, rolling left, rolling right. You know, he was able to do it a lot of different ways. And then when he got to the collegiate level, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that he was going to challenge early for the job. Whether or not he was going to get the job early was an entirely different circumstance. Well, he did. He won the national championship, and he's arguably among the top four or five best football players in college right now. At least many would say that, you know, in terms of what he brings to the table. That entire class is decorated, Matt. Honestly, in terms of the quarterback position, that entire class has a lot of depth, and I think a lot of people that haven't had a chance to watch these players are going to be excited. You're going to have Justin Fields at Ohio State. He's a very interesting player. I actually had him ahead of Trevor Lawrence coming out of high school. Some of that had to do, I think, with the little bit more versatility in his game, given certain kind of athletic advantages that he did have. But also, he was able to do things that Trevor Lawrence was able to do as well, but he was able to do it under pressure. It was a razor thin kind of credit card difference between them.
Like what? What are some things that he's able to do under pressure?
So, I mean, I think with Trevor Lawrence, there's obviously the one big thing that stuck out to me, and it could be storytelling, but, you know, I have no way of knowing other than what I was able to observe on film. At the Elite 11, you know, Justin Fields won the MVP. And the MVP of the Elite 11, for those who, you know, may not know it, it's a very highly touted quarterback competition throughout the country. The Elite 11, for the most part, has kind of shown its mettle over the years as producing really top quality caliber QB prospects. And under those circumstances, Justin Fields edged out Trevor Lawrence in the opening battle. He was able to show, you know, under those circumstances that he played just a little bit sharper and a little bit better than Trevor. And at the time, with no collegiate experience under his belt, I wasn't able to watch any collegiate film. That to me was just enough. Big profile stage, you know, NFL media covering you, and you edged him out ever so slightly. And to me, that was enough to at least, you know, edge him out ever so slightly. The one thing I will say about Justin Fields as a quarterback is, I think when it comes to scrambling and actually gaining yards as a runner, I think Justin Fields is a little bit more proficient when it comes to that than Trevor Lawrence. And while that's not exactly, you know, again, a major part of what they do, you know, at the position, I still think it's something to at least account for and something to be aware of. So when I say it's a razor thin difference, that's what it was. Now, Trevor Lawrence has, you know, obviously taken that and taken it to the next level. And, you know, Justin Fields is now transferred and now he's at Ohio State. So, I mean, you know, how the tale plays out is still unknown, but it kind of went in different directions as far as I was concerned. Matt, let me ask you a question, actually, because you're a fan of Georgia. Where you very much follow the Georgia. I mean, what did you hear about Justin Fields during those exchanges? Or how was that going with Jake Fromm? Did you happen to have any ideas from what you guys were reading personally? Was there any kind of undercurrent going with those two?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not a to be perfectly honest, I'm not someone who really follows a lot of that. And so even though, one of the things that I kind of made a big deal about last year was that, yeah, I worked at Georgia. Yeah, I graduated from Georgia and I worked there for 10 years and I literally was like a 5-minute walk from Sanford Stadium every day for that 10-year period, but I wasn't a Georgia fan, and so I didn't really read a ton. So, like, and I mentioned that last year in the wake of like the Nick Chubb analysis I did, because a lot of people go, "Oh, you worked at Georgia and you were a big Georgia fan." I'm like, "No, not really." So
Well,
I really don't know.
yeah. I mean, listen, I completely understand that because when you're looking at, collegiate players and high school players, it is you can only do so much, number one. And number two, you can only give your attention in great detail to so many things. So for sure, I can appreciate that. And with Justin Fields, the big story behind him, from what I understand, was obviously him going up against Jake Fromm. How is that going to hash out? Was he able to overpower him? Well, clearly he wasn't able to. Clearly he didn't. So now here we are looking at the two players side by side. And for me, like I said, I think they're razor thin in terms of their differences in their skill and their ability. Once you change the environment, though, and this is where, it goes back to that whole passion of mine with skill acquisition and understanding. Once you change the environment, you change the whole mixture and the whole ingredients. Everything now kind of interacts and coexists differently. So the minute you go to a collegiate level stage with everything that goes with that, and I can only speculate what goes on there, I don't know. It changes things. Trevor Lawrence was in a situation where he was able to capitalize, and Justin Fields so far has had to transfer, but you never know. You never know.
I'll add this to it, Matt, is just from just a thought about from a coaching philosophy standpoint. If you're Jake Fromm or you're the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, your quarterback Jake Fromm took you within basically a few minutes of a championship. Are you really going to bench him for a hot young prospect? I know that Nick Saban did, but it takes a lot of guts to do that for a lot of coaches. And one of the things that I've always found is that if you have a, when you have a, we see this a lot when we have a quarterback who's very intelligent in terms of executing what they're supposed to execute and being on point with everything that you want to do with the scheme. He may not be the most physically talented, but if he's executing and the team's playing well, it's a very tough decision to basically bench him for a guy with a lot of great physical skills, and a lot of great passing skills, but may not have that experience. And when you've got a guy who took got you this far away from being national champions, I think that that's probably a difficult call for them to make, and one that I would even argue that it's the difference between a good coach and a great coach. Because you have to be able to have you have to be able to have the guts to do that, but you better be right. You better be right to do that. And I think that Nick Saban has proven that he can walk that razor's edge in a way that a lot of coaches won. And we look at it and go, "Well, that's an easy decision. Go do that." Because fans say it all the time: bench the quarterback, bring this guy in, do that. But to do that in this, second or third quarter of a national championship game and have it work out, people go, "Well, of course," and we all write about it and talk about why strategically it was such a good thing to do. But I'd say probably out of the 1,000 people who wrote that, there's probably 999 of them that wouldn't have done it. So.
Yeah, no. And as we kind of transition to other players at that level, just to keep your eyes out for as you kind of go into this kind of, next couple of years. Obviously Trevor Lawrence, you already mentioned Tua Tagovailoa, obviously at Alabama is another player to watch, in college. These are guys that I think are going to be people that are pushing for being the top quarterbacks respectively in their class. Justin Fields, I still remain pretty resolute that he's a player that is going to excite in some ways. We'll see how it goes at Ohio State. Justin Herbert, obviously we got to be aware of him at Oregon. He was supposed to come out this year. We have to be aware of what he's going to do this upcoming season. Jake Fromm is going to be obviously another player. You were just talking about him earlier. He can't bench the guy who almost got you there. So we'll see if he can kind of take Georgia over the top this year. Jacob Eason, you know, has been an embattled prospect from the moment he kind of entered. You know, he came in, Jacob Eason, and there was a lot of, you know, hullabaloo about him in, you know, Georgia being the guy. And it wasn't quick before he was replaced by Jake Fromm. And now he's at Washington. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation that, you know, he has all the different types of, you know, traits that you want to see. But it's, you know, is he going to be able to put it together? JT Daniels at USC is another player that you should be watching. JT Daniels is another freshman from the same year as Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. Matt Corral. Matt, I think you're going to love Matt Corral. I think you're going to enjoy him a lot. He gives you a lot of that Brett Favre flavor that you love. He's a gunslinger. He just feels the flow. He's very Patrick Mahomes in that way. And I think that you're going to enjoy him a lot. And he's a guy that I really believe you're going to see that Ole Miss Rebels team really take the next step with him at the helm. So he's a player certainly to watch this year. He'll excite people. I think you're going to see arm strength. Unbelievable. I mean, this guy is right. He's going to be able to fire bullets, and he has the overall package to also be able to run an offense. He's courageous in his throws. You know, he shows that sensitivity you want to see. He's a guy who really believes that he has the physical tools to really hit those tight windows. So he uses that as a way to afford him extra opportunities to kind of watch the coverage and make sure he's certain on throws. So, I mean, that can work against you. It can work with you. It depends on, you know, how well you've calibrated yourself to those types of situations. You know, I mean, so those things that he brings to the table are going to be exciting, I think, for people to watch. And a player that I think people are really flying under the radar about, I'll give you one of them that I think is really flying under the radar, and that's Sam Ellinger from Texas. I really like Sam Ellinger. You know, he's like 6'3", you know, 220 plus, I believe. And you're talking about a player who, you know, in Texas, for all the programs in college football, certainly a program that has had a very long history of being great, and now recently has fallen way below that. And now it's starting to kind of come back. And I think Ellinger is one of those players that is responsible for that. He's a very, very rock solid quarterback. He has the, you know, the different types of throws that you want to see at different levels of the field. And he is a player that I think can win and scramble a little bit with his legs. And he's shown improvement over the years, you know, just continuous improvement. And I think he's a player that people are going to be excited about a little bit more as the kind of the season unfolds. So right there in that kind of top 10 or so, those are kind of the players I think people should be kind of watching. And if you want a really kind of deep kind of freshman to look at the position, I'm going to offer you kind of three of them. One of them is Bo Nix. He might very well lead Auburn and win that job over Joey Gatewood. It may very well be Bo Nix's job, and Bo Nix is very much in the same vein as your, you know, Baker Mayfields of the world, very much in the same vein of players like we saw with Kyler Murray. They can scramble, they can move on the run, they can throw on the run, they can throw from different arm slots. Very fun, exciting quarterback to watch. Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. Even though we might not see him start this year, he may get an opportunity. We'll see how it goes. And Graham Mertz from Wisconsin. He may very well start this year as well. So those are some guys across the spectrum, from guys that are seniors to juniors to, you know, draft eligible to non-draft eligible. It really is at the position, I think, a fun position to watch. I think there's a lot of talent, Matt, a lot of talent at the quarterback position.
No, it sounds absolutely great. You know, some of those guys I've certainly seen, like JT Daniels, who's a guy that I'm definitely keeping my eye on. Corral, I haven't seen yet, so I'm looking forward to that. And obviously we've seen Lawrence and Fromm and Eason, you know, and different. And I've seen Ellinger too, and I can understand why you like him. I certainly do. So
yeah, he's intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on a little bit of running back here. I mean, you know, there's some guys that, you know, I mean, I think of DeAndre Swift right off the top of my head because I saw him in high school, you know, up in the Philly, New Jersey area?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and he was fantastic. And then you've got guys like Eno Benjamin and Cam Akers, who's kind of, his career's kind of gone up and down a little bit, you know, because of the Willie Taggart thing, joining Florida State and Florida State being kind of the cupboard being a little barer than it usually is. And you know, there's a number of players we could talk about, but who headlines your list and go through it?
So, yeah, I think if we're going to look at some of the top 10, I'll just rattle off a few and maybe circle back to a couple that you mentioned. I mean, you know, my top 10, you know, kind of watch list right now, and there's so many more here that we can add. But DeAndre Swift immediately comes to mind. He's going to be a draft-eligible prospect ready to watch. Travis Etienne from Clemson. Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins from Ohio State, Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin, Eno Benjamin from Arizona State, A.J. Dillon from Boston College, Najee Harris from Alabama, Trey Sermon from Oklahoma, Kylan Hill from Mississippi State is another player to pay attention to. There really is a huge number of players to really pay attention to. Zach Moss is a player that we saw that could have came
Utah,
out.
But yeah.
Yeah, that we really should be watching again. There's a lot of rumblings that he's going to get the bulk of the work, and they're going to be more of a running team this year. So those are the top list of players. There's so many more. I know I'm obviously forgetting people. Again, it's kind of a two-man show. So
It's a good list. I mean, let's circle back to some of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Swift, right? Everybody wants DeAndre Swift. He's probably the most skillful running back there is in this class, probably overall, in terms of what he can do at both as a receiver and what he can do between the tackles, what he can do running to the outside. There's really very few problems that he doesn't seem to have a solution to. And that's one of the hallmarks, I think, of, you know, skill, is that ability to adapt and be able to perform functionally or better in any situation. He's got a lot of answers. So does Travis Etienne, though. Travis Etienne from Clemson, same type of back. You know, he's a player that's a little bit more, as elusive as he is, he has a little bit more he's willing to use collisions as a way of winning, you know, kind of altercations. He's a player who believes in that. He understands collisions and understands how to behave a little bit differently in collisions than DeAndre Swift. Doesn't mean that Swift can't capitalize, but it means that, you know, Travis Etienne's a little bit more adept. Cam Akers, you mentioned it already. I think Cam Akers is a victim of circumstance, and there's only so much you can do, you know, at FSU. And I think that people forget his background as a quarterback. That's where he came from. He played quarterback growing up. You're not talking about a guy who doesn't understand the landscape of the game and the various responsibilities of different players. And, you know, that's something where I think Cam Akers, with a little bit more this year, hopefully, he begins to emerge. I really haven't given up on a player like him. His profile in terms of his athleticism is through the roof. But even on the field, when you watch him, this is where that whole problem-solving kind of mentality comes in. You know, I think that, you know, really FSU is a place where he started to see problems he probably never had to solve before. And I still think that he had to do a lot more kind of getting used to those problems, calibrating his body to them. And I'm hoping for a bigger jump this year because, you know, all along the way, he had situations where he was either A, the best athlete, or the people blocking for him were better athletes. So, I mean, now here we are in college, and, you know, he's in a situation where he's got to adapt every moment on every play. And I think that's really challenging.
So tell me about this Mississippi State kid.
Kylan Hill. I'm going to be very truthful. Kylan Hill is a player I'm only have a cursory glance to. Okay. So he's a player that, you know, obviously very, very, very much, you know, has the, you know, the traditional things that you would want to say, the burst, the power, the speed. But as far as the insight into him, I really can't give you that deep insight. I know he's been on our tracker for a while. Every time I watch Mississippi State, he's always a guy that's kind of getting the work and getting those big runs. He's a guy that's really interesting to me. But you know what? If a guy that I think that people are forgetting about, and I think he's going to get overlooked, is I think Najee Harris is going to find his way towards the bottom of these rankings in terms of being the top 10. I think you're talking about the guy who's going to end up probably being people's 8th, 9th, 10th running back in a very good class, mind you. I think that's a mistake. I don't think Najee Harris, he's going to get very much early on lumped in with the Derrick Henrys of the world. He's Derrick Henry. I don't know if that's necessarily initially fair. And if it is fair, and we think Derrick Henry is actually going to produce now in the NFL this year, then maybe that's not a bad thing. Because Najee Harris, to me, is a bigger back. And as a result, you tend to kind of disregard the little nuances to the game that make him very special, his tempo, his timing, his ability to understand the blocks in front of him and kind of pivot off of those, find space, adjust his body and coordinate his body in the way that's only unique to him. Again, he's not going to look like Cam Akers and he's not going to look like DeAndre Swift. And if you think that's the reason why he's not good or bad, then you're looking at aesthetics. And I think you're doing it wrong then. Yeah. You want a pretty picture. You want a pretty picture? That's not human behavior. Human behavior is not pretty. It's very messy. Everything on a football field is messy. It's ugly. It's terrible.
And there's different archetypes of the position.
That's right. I mean, and I think that sometimes, Matt, and I know we talk about this a lot, I think people want the aesthetics to go along with the athletic traits and the way it's supposed. They want the aesthetics as much as they want anything. And I feel like that's sometimes where our bias lies.
Yeah. It's the simple answer. It makes the answer simple, because otherwise you actually have to work pretty hard and then face the unknown a little bit more. And, you know, a lot of people who are just casual fans or their media writing stories as opposed to analyzing the game, or maybe asked to analyze in addition to doing stories, I think sometimes what can happen is it's easy to go, well, what's the simple answer? Because I've talked to plenty, you know, I've worked in the media and I've talked with plenty of reporters, and reporters tend to be like, listen, I don't want the long explanation. I want the quick thing. Give me the quick, easy grip handle thing that I can hold on to and write this sentence, because really what I'm trying to do is formulate the story, and I need to have something that is going to be sexy, that's going to grab people, and that people are going to be able to just comprehend right away. And so if you give them nuance, they're like, I don't have time for that. You know, and I think that that happens in a lot of times with larger media, and fans tend to get used to that. They're conditioned to that on some level. So if you say it's a little more complicated than that, LeGarrette Blount is not a banger, you know, and you try to explain that LeGarrette Blount isn't a banger, people go, doesn't make sense. The picture is that he's big, he's strong, he can run over people, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that what you said was really right there. I think sometimes we get conditioned to it, and I think we are conditioned to it. I think that sometimes where I think traits have become something that's oversimplified as well. We use them so often that we begin to, you know, summarize an entire complexity of a human being in like four words.
Yeah.
And it just can't be. It's just that, because if that's true, then there's like 50 million people, 50 million players that we've had throughout history that fit those same four words.
Right.
So it can't be that they're all banging. Like, this just doesn't make – they're not all banging the same way. They're not all bangers the same way. Like, it can't be.
We've basically taken snowflakes that are all unique, and we've basically decided that we're going to classify them into three different brands of snow cones, you know, and on the grocery shelf, you know. Yeah. And that's exactly what it's like. But let's move on to wide receiver, because I know that we're running out of time in terms of what we want to do today. But let's end this with some wide receiver talk. You know, I saw Rondale Moore. I saw Justin Ross. Oh, those were two guys I really wanted. Like, I ended up taking Justin Ross, but I was really jonesing to get Rondale Moore, because he gave me some of that Steve Smith kind of vibe in the open field. Oh,
yeah. Well, you know what it is? I think that some guys for your audience to look out for. I mean, obviously Jerry Jeudy needs very little introduction. Justin Ross. I mean, you already talked about Justin Ross. T. Higgins, I think, is another player on Clemson that you really have to watch. Rondale Moore, you already mentioned it. Laviska Shenault from Colorado is another player to keep your attention to. He's very much, Matt, in that same kind of – he runs in the same kind of world as Rondale Moore. There's a little bit more technician in him right now. He's a little bit more of a polished, more evolved route runner. There's sensitivities to his route running that Rondale doesn't quite have yet, but you can see in Rondale's Moore's nuance already as a freshman. The projection for him is just as high. CeeDee Lamb is a player I really like, and the fact that he's even – this far down on my list in terms of mentioning him just is a testament to how deep even the wide receiver class could potentially be. Brian Edwards is another player to keep on your kind of draft eligible radar. Tyler Johnson from Minnesota, another player. Henry Ruggs III, again from Alabama.
Colin Johnson.
Yeah, well, Colin Johnson, and there you go. And now we're getting into the players like Colin Johnson and Tylan Wallace and players like Seth Williams from Auburn. He would be a sophomore. Jamon Osbun from Texas A&M, who's had injury riddled history already. like you said, Colin Johnson, those guys. I mean, the fact that Colin Johnson's probably at the lower end of that top 10, 12 guys to look at. And again, these rankings are very loose. There's a lot of depth there again as well. Really interesting players. The guy that I would point people to as don't forget about him, even though he's not the hot name, Bryan Edwards. Don't forget about Bryan Edwards. If you miss Bryan Edwards, then I think you're missing out on an opportunity to see a player who is going to be able to attack the intermediate and deep areas of the field. He has body control. He has great hands. And he's a player who can win in those physical situations, not only after the catch, but also in contested situations. You know, there's that idea, again, when we look at skill and you're looking at what he brings to the table that maybe other players don't. This is where I think Hakeem Butler was excellent. This is where I think players like Kelvin Harmon were excellent. These guys bring the sensitivity to winning in collisions with body control. They have a feeling and a sensitivity, a proprioceptive sensitivity, just good old-fashioned, by touch, they know where their body is. By their own understanding of where their body is in space, they know where their leverage is. They can sense the opponent. They can feel the opponent. And that's skillful. People think that's instinct. You can explain instinct. Instinct is a sensitivity to information that's available. These guys are connecting to it. And when they connect to it, they can leverage it, exploit it, and show what they can do. These guys win in ways where you're like, well, they don't get separation. They don't need the same separation because in their mind, they know what they can do at the catch point. And while that may change at the next level, in their mind, they'll have to organize and self-organize what they do, but understand they've been living that way for so long. There's information they're sensitive to that maybe even at the NFL level, DBs might not be ready for. So don't underestimate that they win differently. And I think a player like Bryan Edwards does win differently than every other player. And he can still win in some traditional ways. He can gain separation throughout his route stems. He can do all those things. But I think that when we look at players like receivers, keep in mind that there's information, even though it's imperceptible to you and I, it's the reason why their body is in certain positions that it is. They know that. They can't explain it. And if you ask them after the play what happened, they're going to go, I don't know. I caught the ball. They don't know. There's no, like, some of them know. Some of them don't. But don't think that that's not skillful. That's skillful.
I think that's a fantastic explanation. And what's interesting about that is that, think about Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald was a master of that at Pitt. He's a master at that at Arizona. And I agree with you. And I think one of the things is that if you did actually define it the way you defined it and you start to track it systematically, then yes, it becomes objectivized in terms of like how you're qualifying it. At the same time, I'll say this just as kind of a counter to an extent is that I agree with you completely that they don't need as much separation, except if they're with a quarterback who requires to see that separation to throw the ball. And so, you know, if he has Alex Smith throwing to him, he's going to need to get separated or else Alex Smith isn't getting him the ball. But a guy like, say, in the past, Kurt Warner or Patrick Mahomes now, but Kurt Warner in the past who conditioned himself to say, look, I had to learn how to break every rule that quarterbacking taught me to throw the ball to Larry Fitzgerald, when every fan looks at the Pitt tape and go, well, it's pretty freaking obvious that you just need to put the ball up there because he can win it between two to three people. But quarterbacks aren't taught that, so they have to throw all that out. So it's one of those situations where that's where evaluation becomes messy, because who are they going to get matched with? And who's that player going to have available to him to throw? But I'm with you, because even a guy like Jerry Jeudy, who I watched in his freshman game and just blew me away in the freshman spring game, where he was tracking balls in tight coverage that I was like, that's a pro level type of tracking. Absolutely. To be able to track it over your shoulder the way you did and come up with a solution with the defender tight to your back, but also one coming from like another angle from the outside over top, and to figure out a way to get that ball was, and do it with such level of equanimity you know, when he caught that ball, I was like, I'm sold. I'm completely sold on this guy. And you don't even see that much with his game now, because generally it's what everyone shows on highlights is how quick he is and how nobody can seem to keep up with him. But in the Alabama spring game, I'm watching him and going, my first impression was, this guy can make tight coverage catches. This guy can adjust to the ball in ways that are difficult to do. And then you rarely ever see it now on tape.
No, and to your point, I think that's where what's interesting is, and this is some of the work that I'm doing, you know, kind of off the screen, is it's where you were talking about Kurt Warner, and you were talking about the idea of who's throwing the football. That's where, you know, understanding that it's the reason why football players are kind of intertwined systems. Every player is intertwined with the other. And as a result, and this has been explained before, you know, the technical terminology, shared affordances, basically the idea that there's mutual information that all the players on the field can connect to. And the ability for the quarterback and the wide receiver, it's why we call, yeah, he's so good, we can hit him in the dark. Okay, I can hit him in the dark. Well, that's really something real. there's something actually real about that. In fact, there was a, if you look at other sports, there was a very classic commercial that I was showing my class the other day. In sports analytics, it was Ronaldo, and he was literally showing his ability to connect to a soccer ball kicked at the corner to him, and then they turned the lights off. So they removed his visual perception, and they allowed him to see if he could actually still score on the goal despite losing sight. And they did it at various intervals where the ball would come to him, and then just before it hit him, they would turn off the lights. Could he coordinate his body and still have enough visual information to connect and still actually score the soccer ball? Yes, he was able to do that. Then they did it where it was earlier in the actual pass, and then they did it even earlier to the point where the actual player was kicking the ball to him, and as soon as the ball came off his teammate's foot, they shut the lights. And then in complete darkness, did he have enough information to coordinate his body in order to connect to the ball and still score? And he did. And he did with no sight. So to think that skill stops, you know, at some point, or to think that skill isn't, that there isn't enough information in a moment, is to totally devalue the moment. Every moment is filled with so much information. And the best players, Larry Fitzgerald, the greatest players on the planet, they're able to connect to it over and over and over again on a level where they're connecting to things that you aren't even sensitive to, but they can feel it.
Yeah, well, you know, that story you just mentioned with Ronaldo, which is just a fantastic one, you can also say, I remember watching NFL films and hearing about Johnny Unitas and Raymond Berry practicing at night and being able to throw the ball in the dark, basically, on these routes, because they had developed such a rapport that connection that you just mentioned was existing, you know, between the two. And we're talking about an example from the 50s and 60s, you know, so it's there for sure. I think that's a fantastic, you know, thing to talk about. And I think that it's probably for us something that I know that we need to get more time to talk about some of these things in more detail. Oh. And I think that will whet people's appetite a little bit more for, maybe we need to do this in a couple of weeks, you know?
Well, you know what it is, Matt? Like, I mean, I know we're running short on time. I know we have a few minutes left, but I think the thing is that I think I would say to everybody out there is we are so incredibly complex as human beings. We have so many sensory systems, from our mind to our feel to our auditory systems, everything. And if we just kind of allow ourselves to just embrace that complexity a little bit, then when you watch a player do what he's doing, it's not just technique, something that was taught to him by a coach. The timing, the spacing, everything that's being executed, that player has to know when to do what he's doing, as much as he has to coordinate his whole body to do it. So that timing aspect, even if we just look at timing, if he had done that shoulder fake a half a second earlier, would it have really gotten the hips turned of the DB? Maybe not. I know we don't know for sure. I get that. But it, what I think is that if we look at what a player sees, thinks, and feels as something that is embedded in their actual movement, we have an opportunity to see skill at a different level.
I think that's great. And I'm going to throw something out here just for us to leave out here and hanging here. And it's way out there in left field. I mean, way out there in left field. But it's interest me, and it just kind of came to mind. And it's this. Okay, so we talk about the senses, and listen, Matt is you're a math teacher, correct?
Yes.
You are definitely grounded in logic, you know, when it comes to certain things. Yes, for sure. So he is not stating this. I am. Okay. But I'm a little more esoteric. maybe.
I don't know.
Listen, maybe not.
We're theorizing.
We're theorizing.
The universe is our palette.
Well, I'm about to share something that's a little out there. Okay. Right, but I'm going to apply it to football. I promise.
Nice.
And the idea is this. All my life, I have had certain instances in my life where, say, I'm working on a typewriter. A lot of you may not know what an electric typewriter is, but it was the precursor to a computer, and it's usually pretty frickin' loud. And when I was learning to type, I would have music on. And I remember oftentimes, you know, I'd be in instances like this where it would be loud, there'd be a lot of ambient noise going around. And I would hear a knock on the door, or I'd hear a doorbell, literally hear the doorbell, the tone of the doorbell, the two-tone tone. And I'd get up, and I'd walk to the door. Then I'd open the door, and nobody's there. But then, like, about 2 seconds later, the car would pull up of one of my friends or whoever was showing up to the house. And, you know, that sounds kind of out there. It's happened all my life. It still happens to this day. Sometimes I will wake up and I'll be asleep and I'll hear a doorbell and it'll jolt me awake. And I'll get up and walk to the door and nobody's there. And then Amazon shows up like literally like 30 seconds later after I close the door. And there is a concept. I don't know what it's called, but it's something like auditory. It's some sort of auditory idea of some things. And I just wonder if players, some great players, have a heightened sense of things on a level that we haven't fully explained.
Oh, I got something for you. Can I add?
Yeah.
So, for those of you out there that may or may not know some of the things I'm working on a paradigm shift. Not because what we're doing in evaluation is different, but just maybe giving a different palette of colors for the artists out there to work with. And it's kind of called the player problem solver paradigm. And it's all rooted in ecological dynamics, which I'm hoping to put something together for, you know, everybody to kind of feel out what I'm talking about. So I'm working on that right now. So stay tuned. But one of the concepts is something called affordance-based control. And that concept is basically rooted in the idea that player sensitivity to information as it unfolds during a game allows them prospective control, allows them futuristic type of control. And the idea or the premise behind this theory is that players are always kind of reorganizing their solutions as the play unfolds. And as they connect to information, they're reconciling that with their own ability. And as they begin to see that the potential information is leading to an outcome that their ability is unable to handle, they begin to re-coordinate their body to address the situation appropriately.
So imagine,
like, for example, for those of you that enjoy baseball, right? Maybe you played center field one day, and I think it's a great example, and I definitely am stealing this from somebody. But when you think about playing center field, you're tracking a ball in the air. And as you're running, you're in many ways becoming sensitive to the trajectory of the ball. And that has to do with information you're picking up right there, then and now. It's not something you're kind of thinking about. You're not doing calculations in your head, your head. You're picking up on it as you're running. And as you're running, you're saying, well, if I can stay with the ball, then if the velocity of the ball relative to me is zero, well, meaning I'm keeping up with it, I should be able to intercept it, catch it, and be good. But the minute I begin to perceive that that ball is going faster than myself is the minute I begin to say, you know what? I got to take a different kind of solution to this problem. I'm not going to be able to catch that ball. So what am I going to do differently so I can begin to efficiently handle the problem that's going to occur? And that's the idea of kind of this idea of perspective control. And I mean, it's not exactly with the next level ESPN that you were showing. No, I mean, like, it's not exactly the ESPN that you were talking about. You might be spooky. Am I okay tomorrow? Am I going to make it to work, Matt? Like, am I going to make it there?
I'm not. No, I'm not talking that. But yeah.
But it's tangentially related because it does. It looks like it's something next level. And the idea is that many of these paradigm shifts that I'm talking about, this problem solver mentality, is kind of looking at more of like incorporating energy flows and beginning to say to ourselves, you know, we can at least wrap our minds around some players maybe not fitting the normal quintessential, you know, kind of features of a player that's going to be successful, and kind of asking ourselves, you know what, but what can they do functionally? Can they solve the problems that are available to them? How are they doing it? Are they connecting to information that's available to them? And the language of answering these questions is in their actions and taking a little bit more of a kind of careful glance at how they begin to solve the problems they're kind of facing on the field. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I went off on a tangent there. I'm sorry, Matt.
No, that's okay. I mean, listen, I went, I didn't even go to left field. I went up into the stands. But it was something that just was kind of interesting to me. And I knew that was the direction that you wanted to be able to go. So listen, you know, this was an excellent show. I think it's a good precursor to what we'll talk about in the future here, especially maybe we can talk a little bit more about fits for the coming class. But I think more so it would be more interesting to talk about what we ended this show with in the final 15 minutes. But Matt, it's always a pleasure to get to talk football with you. And again, remind everyone where they can follow you.
Hi. Listen, you could find me pretty easily, to be honest with you, at Matty_S2S. And you could find a lot of – there you go. And there's my son kind of giving you the same chirp. So awesome. There you go. You can find me at Matty_S2S. And you can find myself, Paul Perticchese's work, and David Nakano's work at SaturdaySundayFootball.com. We're at S2S Football. You can find us at S2S Football on Twitter. You can find us at S2SFootball.com on the internet. So on that note, Matt, I am relieving you of our senses because here we go. My son is very interesting. He wants to kind of chime in, so I'm not going to let him do that right now. For everybody else out there, thank you. If you have any interest in talking further about this, I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Matt. And, you know, I want to thank everyone for listening. Of course, you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, and Blueberry. You know, the RSP cast, you can rate and review it if you'd like, or send me an email at mattwaldmanrsp.com. Of course, the RSP post draft is available now at mattwaldman.com. Easy to log in and be able to get that information that you would like to get. And on behalf of Matt and I, thank you again for listening. You guys have a good week.